Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I think I'm cute. I know I'm sexy. I got the looks. The drive, the girls.
Wow. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Sorry, we're having some fun. Remember this song because I'm going to ask you to remember it coming up when we go to break. John Chuckery Show back in the Key Studios. 404-741-0929. That's our phone line. That's our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. If you want to interact with the show, we're streaming online. Go to 929thegame.com. It's our new and improved website. Catch us live. Replays the shows, interviews, finest moments, breaking sports news, 929thegame.com. Download your radio.com app. Always catch us on the go. I listen on the app every morning, honestly. I listen on my phone if I'm somewhere, or I listen on my tablet if I'm getting ready. If you got your Commodore 64, your turntable, your Laserdisc player, Texas Instruments calculator, whatever you got, Sega Genesis, just download it on some kind of device that you own. That way you can catch us as you're out and about. We also, too, have all of our social media at 929. Don't call now. Don't call now. We're not giving away now. Don't call now. Not yet. I haven't made the announcement yet. I'm not your boy toy. I haven't made the announcement yet. So anyway, 929 at 929 The Game, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. It's all there. The best way to follow along with this particular show is through our personal Twitter handles. I am at JMCH316, at JMCH316. It's all your water cooler talking points, if I could speak. 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that's out there. He is behind the glass producing tonight, Jarvis, in the house at Jarvis D9. We'll hear from Jarvis a little bit later on, by the way, too. So when Jarvis is up there at Falcons training camp, just to give you a brief kind of synopsis, when Jarvis is up there, not training camp, but up at the Falcons practice, so they've kind of changed around the schedule and everything this year with Dan goes on a little bit later in the day, players open locker rooms a little bit later in the afternoon, so we're going to have Jarvis. He's going to kind of catch up with some of the players over the course of the year. You know, you'll get 2, 3, 4 minutes with those guys. So Jarvis, throughout the season, he's going to catch up. He's going to be up there in Flower Branch. We're going to let him. I told him, go up there, talk with these guys, get a few minutes. Let's hear what they have to say. So in the Falcon flyover on Wednesday nights, we'll probably have, you know, somebody on each week that Jarvis is up there. So since we're not really broadcasting up there this year, just like I said, the schedule's kind of all changed around. They've also taken away some of the areas we can broadcast and stuff like that. So, Jarvis being up there all the time, so I want to follow him at Jarvis D90, is that catch up on who he's talking to and what's going on up there. So today, the NCAA said that proposed legislation in California. Remember, we've talked about this story here on the show. Again, all I'm going to say is we've been ahead of the curve on this kind of stuff and talking about this stuff before it's gotten to page one news. We told you about the Fair Pay to Play Act that's going on in California, where basically collegiate athletes have a chance to earn money off their likeness while they're in school. Which I guess goes against everything that Lynn Swann believes in as he's flying out to Virginia to get his $50,000 payday. But, hey, that's fine. So the NCAA Board of Governors sent a letter Wednesday to California Governor Gavin Newsom asking that the state not pass the bill. Now, the state Senate is expected to vote on this Fair Pay to Play Act this week. Then that would put it in the governor's hands to decide if he will sign it into law. Now, this will not go into effect, so you understand, until 2023. But it would make it illegal for California schools to take away an athlete's scholarship or eligibility as punishment for accepting endorsement money. Let me repeat that, because this is transformative. This is not ham and egger, funk and Wagnalls, fish heads and rice kind of stuff. Okay? It would be illegal for California schools to take away an athlete's scholarship or eligibility as punishment for accepting endorsement money. California State Assembly approved the bill with a 73 to vote earlier in the week. And we talked about that a couple of weeks ago, about they were going to vote on that. Now, by the way, one of the things that I said, athletes. Notice what I didn't say. I didn't say football players only, basketball players only. So all of the, they can't do title. For all you people that don't have a clue what Title IX is and understand all, and you start throwing out that well, how are they going to do this with Title? Again, everybody. You're on the swim team. If you can get endorsement money being a swimmer, you're allowed. You'd be allowed with this law. Okay? So again, for all you people for all these years telling me, you're not going to be able to do it because you got women's sports and Title IX and all these things that you have no clue what you're talking about. Okay? The law isn't for football and basketball players only. Okay? It's for athletes in the state of California. Just like when North Carolina wanted to unionize at all of them. Not just football and basketball. It was all athletes. Okay? We got that part clear now? Okay? For all the people out there that you can't do it because, you know, Okay. All right. Do I sound upset? Do I sound a little aggravated? Do I sound a little agitated? Yeah. I'm fascinated by these topics. Like this stuff fascinates me because this should, you know, in 2019 that this should already be in place, but that's okay. By the way, they're replaying the Monday night game up here. Did you see where ESPN is going to get rid of their down and distance thing that they had? There was some kind of graphic or something like that people got mad at, and they're going to get rid of it or whatever like that starting next week. But anyway, I'm just watching it because the Monday night broadcast is up there. Now, the NCAA opposed the bill because it would make it illegal, as we said, for them to make money. The NCAA Board of Governors chairman, Michael Drake, who is also the president at the Ohio State University, told ESPN that the NCAA is, quote-unquote, working actively to look at ways to modernize its approach to name, image, and likeness restrictions. Oh, really? Oh, so it's cool when you sell the jerseys online, but hey, no, sorry, Johnny Manziel, you can't sell your jersey. Now, we can sell your jersey with your name on it, but, you know, okay. And Jay Billis has pointed this out and everybody about, you know, how crazy this whole thing is. So they're saying that they believe that this is unconstitutional. I'm looking for the quote here because I wanted to read the quote directly. And by the way, the NCAA in court in these cases, it doesn't fare very well when they try to challenge some of these things. It always goes against them when they try to do this. Let's see here. When asked if the current NCAA rules are fair, Drake said the rules need to evolve. God, I love these terms, don't you? Evolve. Quote, well, fair is an interesting word. Oh, okay. Okay. I got it. We need to look at the rules carefully. My understanding broadly of name, image, and likeness and the implication of those restrictions has changed really over the last several years and continues to evolve. We need to make sure our rules and pardon me. Let me read this in my Neil Bortz voice to make sure we get the correct dealing of it. We need to look at rules at the NIL eligibility rules more understand. My understanding broadly of name, image, and likeness and the implications of those restrictions has changed really over the last several years and continues to evolve. We need to make sure our rules and guidelines evolve forward. We're not the association of the 20th century. We need to make sure that we have 21st century rules. I always just laugh when I read all this. Now, it says that there are several other states that are considering similar laws. Congressman Mark Walker of North Carolina has proposed a change to federal tax code that could force the NCAA to change its position on name, image, and likeness on a national scale. Drake said that a national change is much more desirable for the NCAA. Okay, then make it happen. See, this is the thing, is that the NCAA says, yeah, we want to do this and we want to do that, but they're never proactive in any of this stuff. They always wait until federal cases come, you're sued, I'm taking you to court, I got to take you, Ed O'Bannon's got to take you to the Supreme Court. Then it's, well, you know, maybe our position can evolve. It's never ahead. You know, they still live, as Steve Spurrier always says, it's a 1950s rule book trying to govern in the 21st century. It doesn't work. And that's why I say the NCAA would be better to just go away. It would be better to blow it up and start over with a more modern organization. But when you're just trying to revise the rule book, tell people that you're going to evolve your positions on things. You're not proactive. You know, think about how long it was that texting, was out of bounds and stuff like that for how you communicated with kids and different things like that. I mean, it's the inherent problem with the NCAA. It has this fiefdom, and it acts like that. It has no subpoena power, no governing power per se, but it has this fiefdom over everything. And remember, it's a nonprofit organization where almost $900 million of money rolls through the organization. And you know why they give money to this school and give money? Because they have to. They're nonprofit. They have to do something with their money. They can't just put it in their pockets and say, here we go. I hope Gavin Newsom, and I'll be honest with you, okay, political chuckery here, I'm not a big fan of Gavin Newsom, but I hope he signs this into law and forces the hand of the NCAA. You want to make it national? Okay. California said, screw you, we're not waiting around. We're going to do it. We're not going to wait around. Go make it national then. And that wasn't what's bugging chuckery. We still got that coming up at 8:40. Jason Butt of The Athletic coming up first, 404-741-0929. At the start of the segment, we played the entrance music, and we played a lot more in 3 seconds because, hell, I sang it. Okay? Fifth caller, 404-741-0929. Whose entrance music was that? You got 2 tickets to SmackDown if you can tell me. Jason Butt up next. Chuck Reed in the Kia Studios. Hell of a lot to get to. We're fired up on a Wednesday. Sports Radio 929 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is a John Chuck Reed show with you here live on a Wednesday evening as we get ready for Falcons home opener against the Philadelphia Eagles. Of course, looking for anything of a better performance than what happened last week up in Minnesota. Let's go out to the WadeFord.com hotline. He's the Falcons beat writer for The Athletic. Jason Butt joining us here. You can follow Jason on Twitter at Jason H Butt, 2 T's on the end of Butt. Jason, as always, appreciate it, buddy. Thanks for jumping on tonight with me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
You know, obviously, we got the depth chart with Jamon Brown going to be the starter. Of course, Lindstrom's injury going to keep him out for a while. And I know they signed John Wetzel. You know, I know this team talked about, obviously, the investment into its offensive line and building depth and stuff like that. Man, it just, Jason, as a fan, it just feels scary. It feels like we're one play away from another era of Wes Schweitzer having to take over at one of these starting spots along the offensive line.
Well, that's kind of what happens to a team when injuries start to hit. And obviously it's one injury, and it happened really early. And I think last year a lot of fans probably have some PTSD with how all the injuries just piled up, but they did their part to try and ensure that, what happened last year with the depth at guard wouldn't necessarily happen again. I do know that they've been really happy with Matt Gonneau's progression, and he did get some guard reps last year. So I do think if something happened, in the interior, he or even Tyson Braley would get a look at guard. That's part of not necessarily the plan, but I think that would be something they would consider, if the case presented itself for it. So, not necessarily, Wes Schweitzer being the guy you're going in if another injury happens at guard. That's not necessarily the case. I think right now he definitely is considered a backup center. He did play, obviously came in the other night just because he was active, because he's the backup center, and the numbers game wouldn't allow Jamon Brown to be active. But, you know, they did what they had to do to try and ensure that the depth at the guard spots would be better this year. And obviously with Chris Lindstrom going down so early, it's easy to see why they wanted to do that.
Jason, I know what the numbers say statistically over the last, whatever, 15, 10, 12 years, whatever like that, about teams that start out 0-2 and their chances of making the playoffs. So how much does this become a must-win game in your mind Sunday?
Yeah, it's somewhere maybe in the 50-55% range for me in terms of whether it's a must-win game or not. I kind of flip back and forth. Obviously, you don't want to start 0-2. At the same time, after the Eagles game, you got the Colts, you got the Titans, you got the Texans, and you got the Cardinals. And those four games are fairly winnable, I think, when you compare it to the talent the Falcons have. Obviously, the Falcons didn't show they were a talented team against the Vikings, but, you know, that's a game that I think might be an anomaly when it's all said and done. I think Atlanta should show up and play better, win or lose, against Philadelphia this coming Sunday. So if they are 0-2, I don't necessarily think it's a death sentence, but it's definitely an uphill climb. You don't see too many 0-2 teams, you know, get back in the playoff hunt. And I think New Orleans started 0-2 last year, though, so they're there are the exceptions, but obviously, statistically speaking, it's tough. So, you know, you want to play it safe. You got to get a win. You know, especially at home. I mean, the goal ultimately for teams, you know, those who are vying for division titles, is to get as many wins as possible at home and then split on the road. So, you know, they're at home, and they Atlanta needs to get it. You know, especially if they're going to be in contention for an NFC South title, which is a goal that they've obviously set out for, you know, before the season started.
Falcons beat writer for The Athletic, Jason Butt, joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Jason, it's a new era in the NFL. Obviously, guys are not playing very much in the preseason across the league, and especially, you know, at the superstar type of level. And I got no problem with that, and I have no issues with that. But if you're not going to play, you know, and my best player, you know, and I always say 11's the best player on this team. Two might be the most important, but 11's the best player. But if you're going to play, you got to give me more than six, you know, for 31 yards. What do you think it was? I mean, again, I understand how good Minnesota is defensively, and they're a very good secondary. Mm-hmm. 11 is still the best player on the field when he steps out on the field. Why was there such a lack of production with that combination of him and Matt on Sunday?
Yeah, Minnesota did a good job with the pressure packages, obviously, and then on top of that, the secondary contained, you know, a lot of the deep routes. If going back and watching the game again, you know, with the coaches' film on NFL Game Pass, you know, every time they tried to send guys deep, it was those routes were covered. Now, the one time they did have a possible connection deep, you know, Matt Ryan overthrew him, and you know, there was obviously a. It looked to be like a broken play in the Vikings corner flip, and you know, Matt and Julio were unable to connect on that on what looked to be an out and up. So you know, that obviously hurt the statistics there, but you know, it did seem like, you know, until the very end when Julio did get that touchdown, you know, in garbage time, that, you know, most of the stuff that was opening up were the underneath routes and the out routes. And I think to a degree you got to credit Minnesota for you know, doing that. And, you know, Xavier Rhodes has done a really good job against Julio Jones historically. It just seems to be, for whatever reason, one of the tougher matchups Julio goes against. So, you know, I wouldn't put much of the game on Julio as it was how Minnesota, the Mike Zimmer defense, and they typically play their best football at the beginning of the season. And it was an odd team under Zimmer where it seems like they just start hot, and then, you know, mid-year, let's reevaluate how good of a team Minnesota is. Because that seems to be when the wheels start falling off. So we'll see if that happens again for the Vikings. But pretty much like last year. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put much stock in Julio's performance being on him. I think it was a collective effort across the board. A lot of it being Atlanta, the offensive line not protecting Ryan too well, and you know, Ryan having a good game himself, trying to force the throws, you know, throwing those two picks, and then you know, the defense not doing a good job being able to stop the run and allowing Minnesota to control the tempo of the game and making Atlanta one-dimensional once they went up 21-0.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game's John Chuckery shows. We're live on the WadeFord.com hotline. He's the Falcons beat writer for The Athletic, Jason Butt, joining us here for a few more minutes. Jason, you know, to me it feels like Sunday night you got to get off to a quick start. I mean, obviously that game just got out of control within 5-7 minutes of play out there. And look, the offense needs to feel good, or the defense, whatever it's going to be, a stop on defense, or, you know, go down and get some points. But man, this team has got to get off, to me, it feels like, to a fast start on Sunday and get those just kind of bugs out of their head about what last week was.
Yeah, and one thing that they could really benefit from would be a turnover. You know, being minus three in turnover differential against Minnesota is just something that has been eating at the Falcons, you know, these last few days. You're just not going to win games too often, especially at the professional level, if you turn the ball over at that rate and they're able to produce turnovers. So they can get a big play defensively. That would, especially early in the game, that would be a lot of energy needed to a group that could certainly use some big plays. I really do expect Atlanta to play better. It does seem like, and just having talked to some people, it seems like there is a lot more focus and attention. Not that there wasn't any before. It just feels like, you know, coming off of a game like that, guys in that building are, you know, just incredibly unhappy, as they should be. And they are angry at what happened. You know, you plan an entire offseason. You have all this time to get ready for an opponent, and then you lay an egg that quickly, as you mentioned previously. You know, 5-7 minutes, the game gets out of hand, and then I think it's going to be a side of them that shows that they really want to prove that they're not the team that was displayed in Minnesota. So win or lose this week, I definitely expect a much better team to show up. You know, especially with it being the home opener too. Obviously, Philadelphia is a really good team, so it's definitely asking a lot to have to open against Minnesota and then Philadelphia. We'll see. How the matchups align and everything, and if Atlanta can, even the season up at 1-1. I definitely think that it'll be an improved unit on the field Sunday.
Jason, with Brown starting and, you know, assuming that McGarry's going to get more reps at right tackle and maybe his conditioning starts to get up to speed, and assuming that they also don't get out, you know, they don't get two touchdowns behind within a couple of minutes, but do you feel like that they will start to try to commit more to the run game? You certainly have a lot of more physical guys, especially with Brown going to be in there. I mean, he's an earth grader, so, I mean, you're going to have some guys that can ideally move some people around. Do you think that they try to get themselves a little bit more committed to running the football to start that game on Sunday?
Yeah, I do. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, bringing Dirk Koetter back and doing what they did with the offensive line. This is a philosophy that Dan Quinn wants to do. He wants to be able to run the ball. He wants to establish that before they start, you know, taking the deep shot. You know, I think that they'll definitely take their chances on first down, first and 10, and with the passing game too. But I think ultimately they want to establish a run. They want to do to a degree, they want to do what Minnesota was able to do to Atlanta, and that's line up, run the ball, and get chunk plays off of that, and then essentially keep the defense on its heels. And that's really the way you can do that. You know, at the tempo that you really want to do at this level, and that's just a rushing attack. And getting down 21-0 at that point, you know, what can you do as an offense? You got to score. You got to score quickly. And on top of that, the run wasn't all that productive. The offensive line, looking back, obviously they didn't have a good game. But looking back, I don't think the offensive line was as bad as maybe it seemed in the run game. I think if you're Devontae Freeman, you got to take that cut and get upfield a little quicker. I think, Ito Smith, maybe he get some more opportunities this week. As a result, he had some plays out there that he kind of liked it when it came to decisiveness. So I think that's going to be a big focal point this week, in those meeting rooms, to ensure that and on the practice field, to make sure that the run game is a central theme to so that they can possibly wear down Philadelphia, when it gets late in the game in the fourth quarter.
Follow him on Twitter at Jason H. Butt. He's the Falcons beat writer for The Athletic. Jason Butt, join us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. As always, Jason, appreciate it, buddy. Thanks for the time, and we'll be talking to you down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. Take care.
You got it. John Chuck, we're here. We'll be back. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back into the Kia Studios. John Chuck, we're here with you. Taking until 11 o'clock, 404-741-0929. That's our phone line. That's our Solomon Brothers Dynamic text line if you want to interact with the show. Don't forget, you can catch us on social media. The station's at 929 The Game. I'm at JMCH316. He's at JarvisD90. Want to say congratulations to Ross out of Noonan. Want a pair of tickets to see SmackDown Live at State Farm Arena coming up next Tuesday, September 17th. See your favorite WWE stars on Tuesday, September 17th. Limited tickets are available at WWE.com. I think they may be having somebody. I heard rumor and innuendo, and I'm going to have to find out for sure. Because if Bailey's going to be here next Tuesday, I'm going to come down and get a photo and stuff with her. I think freaking Hugh maybe should let me just do the interview, because what exactly are they going to ask Bailey if she? Anyway, I'm just saying. Yeah, as Bailey, I had some of that in my coffee the other day. Where we stand on Bailey in your coffee? Vote in our Twitter poll. Anyway. Speaking of being smarmy and sarcastic, let's get to What's Bugging Chuckery.
Don't look now, but somebody out there just got Chuckery ticked off. Like, that's hard.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
It's time for What's Bugging Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Well, you know, listen, the more things change, the more things stay the same. As the Cleveland Browns can't even get their throwing of fans out right. So I don't know if you saw or not, but there was a there was an incident. The Browns and Tennessee Titans played the other day in Cleveland. There was an incident where a group of players went into the stands for the Tennessee Titans. I think it was toward the end of the game. But so some players for the Tennessee Titans went into the stands and were celebrating. And there was a fan with a Baker Mayfield jersey, long beard, sunglasses, who took a beer and was dumping it on the Tennessee Titans players. And another Tennessee Titan player kind of came and knocked the beer away and all that good kind of stuff, okay? So this article talks about a guy named Eric Smith was going about his morning at the Cleveland Music Group when he got a call from Bob Sivic. Who is, and I'm assuming that's how you pronounce it, S-I-V-I-K, okay? He's the Browns' vice president of ticket sales and service, okay? Sivic, Smith says, informed him that he had been identified as the fan who poured a beer on Titans player Logan Ryan during the Browns game at First Energy Stadium on that Sunday afternoon. Now, Smith, okay, Eric Smith, the guy who was banned, says this was shocking to him for a couple of reasons. First, he wasn't at the game. Second, he hadn't been to a game in nearly a decade. In fact, I think it was 2010 is what they said was the last time he was at a game. Third, he was DJing at a wedding at the Ariel International Center on that afternoon. He says, quote, I was at home with my family until 2 when I left for the wedding. Now, Smith says none of that seemed to matter to Sivic, who told Smith that he'd been caught on multiple cameras around the stadium, that the team had matched his tattoos, and that he had bought a ticket. Smith was informed he was banned from the stadium. Now, never mind the fact he says that Eric Smith is a common name, okay? Or that Eric looks like a million other bearded, redheaded men, or that he clearly didn't buy a ticket, or that he wasn't at the game. Smith says he told them to please send me the footage. And he was like, you don't have to get defensive if you're innocent. Okay. So they'd been looking for the person who did all of this. The team said in a statement, the individual person's action is not tolerated in our building, nor is it as it is not reflective of our fan base or city. We're currently addressing the situation internally along with NFL security, and we believe we've identified the person involved. You will ultimately face an indefinite ban from First Energy Stadium for unacceptable behavior, which is in clear violation of our fan code of conduct. Well, Cleveland Scene has reached out. That they did this article. They've reached out to the Browns for comment, but none haven't heard anything back yet. Now, again, unless this guy is the biggest liar in history, seems like he's got a pretty tight alibi if he was with his family, doing DJ work, didn't buy the ticket. Like, it wouldn't be hard for him to, like, go through bank records and show, okay, when was the ticket purchased? But because the Browns can't even forget what they do on the field, because that was embarrassing what they did on the field against Tennessee. So much for, you know, remember all the hype and hoopla about them. But leave it to the Cleveland Browns to not even be able to get out of their own way and identify the right guy. Like, wouldn't you think, like, they would do a little bit deeper dive into this than finding a guy from their past or in their database or something like that? Like, it shouldn't be hard to track down when the ticket was sold, right? Tickets have a barcode on them, right? They're scanned, they're barcode. It shouldn't be hard to figure out who, how, and where the source of that comes from. You would think, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. And it won't be hard for Eric Smith to prove that, hey, here's copies of my bank statements. I never purchased the ticket. He said it was purchased on this day. Here's bank statements. Nothing was purchased. There was no transaction for the ticket. Again, unless you tell me he's the best liar going and his family is in on it and they're all in cahoots with one another, this seems like a pretty easy case to disprove. But again, leave it to the Browns for just finding somebody randomly to say, you're banned. I guess that's why the Browns will always be the Browns, huh? And that's what's bugging Chuckery. 404-741-0929 is our phone line. That's also our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line if you want to interact with the show. We've got another set of tickets, by the way, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour for, by the way, if you didn't know that first song, that was Shawn Michaels. That was Shawn Michaels' theme. I'm not your boy toy. Sexy boy, you know. You know who originally sang that song? You know the very first version of that song? You know, that's Shawn Michaels singing the song. Shawn Michaels sang his own song in that. Yeah, that's Shawn Michaels singing. The original version, that's not the original version. The original version, you guys will never guess. That should be a ticket giveaway. The original version was Sherry Martel. Sherry Martel, when she managed him, sang the original version of that. He's got the looks. I know he's sexy and all that. She sang the original version of that song. She did the original version of that song, Boy Toy, and all that. And then Shawn Michaels did it from there. So that is Shawn Michaels that sings that sings this song on all of that kind of stuff, in case you were just wondering or whatever. So Jarvis will have another cut. I can't wait to hear, because I like to guess what the music is. So in the 9 o'clock hour, if you didn't win, in the 8 o'clock hour, we still have in the 9 o'clock hour, we have two more tickets that we give away. Are we giving away any tomorrow or Friday? Is it all week? Friday. Okay, so when we're so we have a full show back on Friday. We only got an hour tomorrow, so we got a full show on Friday. So we'll give away, two more sets of tickets on Friday. So, yeah, lots of good stuff out there. The only thing I will say is you can't play Austin's theme, because that's mine. Can't play. Yeah, that's the one you're not allowed to play. That's the one that Jarvis said he'll respect the wishes. You can't play the Georgia Rattlesnake and the Texas Rattlesnakes theme. All right, Oklahoma State lost one of its faithful, one of the biggest donors in all of college athletics, passed away today. We'll give you that story next. Chuckman, the Key Studio, Sports Radio, 910 The Game.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.